Hello, you're listening to the first episode of the Rock Chalk Talk podcast. We don't have an official title yet, but I think we're going to go with Rock Chalk Talk Talk, just for the pun factor. I'm Steve Fetch, a.k.a. Fetch9, if you read the site, and with me is Andrew Clark, also known as KU Grad 08. Grad, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Well, this podcast is basically just going to be, you know, hopefully we're going to keep it to about a half hour every time and kind of record. You know, we'll try to get a schedule once we get going here, but for now it's probably just going to be whenever we're available to record, and it's just going to be talking about football for now and then basketball when that gets underway, and hopefully some broader Big 12 and national topics. So tonight I think we're just going to jump right in. Got K-State this weekend. They're obviously, I think it's fair to say, one of the top 10 teams in the country, probably the best team in the league right now, and we're obviously not. So the past 2 years they've been bloodbaths. They've put up 50-plus points on us each time. I guess I'll just ask you, do you think it's going to be kind of a blowout like the past couple of years, or do you think we're going to keep her close, or are you going to drink the Kool-Aid and think that we'll win?
Well, you know, I kind of go back and forth on this. For starters, there's one game that stands out to me, and it was a couple years ago. It was USC versus Stanford. And I think Stanford was either coming off a two-win season or in the midst of a two-win season. USC, I think, was 1 or 2 at the time. Went in, Stanford catches like a Hail Mary at the back of the end zone late in the game. They win like 14-10 or something like that. Huge, huge upset. I mean, when you look at the two teams, this is probably even bigger than if KU knocks off K-State. So naturally, I'm playing this up in my mind, and I'm like, you know, rivalry game. Weiss hasn't fired up. Like, oh my gosh, maybe this is going to be a repeat of that. And then I come back down to earth and I say, no, we're probably going to lose by 50 points.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, just look at the track record. I mean, Snyder always has his teams juiced up to play KU. And you can hear that through the players. You listen to K-State players on the radio. I heard a couple of interviews and they're saying, you know, we want to beat KU. They're our number one rival. We don't care about the records. And, I mean, they're focused. They're dialed in. We've only beaten Snyder once. That was my freshman year. And I ran down the field and helped tear down the goalposts. And from what I remember, it was just an incredible night. But, I don't know. You know, it's kind of, you know, we're like that in basketball. You know, our opponents, our rivals in basketball at this point have gotten to the fact where they've just resigned themselves to the fact that KU is always going to be good under self. And something near miraculous is usually going to have to happen for them to beat us. And you know what? It's time for us all just to give Snyder that same respect. So I'm going to say 45-17 K-State.
Yeah, I think unfortunately that's kind of where I'm leaning to. You mentioned the rivalry thing. How much do you think the players have bought into the fact that, you know, obviously Missouri was our big rival? I mean, K-State was too, but Missouri was definitely the game that all the fans and I think most of the players kind of circled as the game, and now that they're gone, you know, it kind of has to be K-State, and it's like, I don't know if it's because I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that we're awful and not going to win, but I haven't really been, like, pumped up all week for this game or anything. It's just kind of another game on the schedule. I mean, do you think the players have really bought into the fact that it's a big rivalry yet?
You know, I honestly don't really think they have, because when you hear the players talk about it, they'll say some things like, oh, well, you know, yeah, they're our in-state rival. And they mention in-state before it every time. Like, well, they're our in-state rival.
But, right.
You know, they'd always say, well, Missouri's our rival. And, you know, I think a lot of it goes to the history of the two programs. I mean, KU and Missouri, they both really started turning things around at kind of the right time. Or the same time, I should say. And, you know, they kind of slowly, you know, 2003, 2005, you know, both programs started getting out of just mediocrity and started getting to about, you know, the 6-7 win mark. Then 2007 happens. Both teams find themselves, you know, one game for the North. And had Missouri beaten Oklahoma the next game, they would have been the title game. And obviously had KU won that game, they would have been the same boat. And so I think just kind of that whole the parallel the two programs were on, and then, you know, the game that happened the next year was just incredibly epic. The back and forth, the shootout, 4th and 7, Reesing hits Meyer, and everyone goes bonkers. And next year, same thing. I mean, KU has a really late lead. So I think the rivalry, it's not just KU and Missouri. It's the similarities the programs had from just kind of coming out of nowhere, becoming really strong. Those 3 years where there was incredibly high stakes on the game and very late victories, come from behind victories. And, you know, you look at K-State and it's just more, gosh, in the 90s and early 2000s, they beat the crap out of us. Snyder retires. We win, you know, 3 in a row off of them. Snyder comes back and it's the same it ever was. So, I mean, there's just, you can't say, you know, throw the records out the window. You know, anything can happen. There's not that, there isn't that unpredictability we had with K-Missouri because, no, you have to consider the records and you have to consider who's coaching because you just have to look at history. So, and I think, because of all those factors, the players, they feed off of that. I mean, they're probably aware of the history between the two programs. They know where things are at. And gosh, if I'm a KU player and I saw K-State go into Norman and beat Oklahoma last week, I got to be saying to myself, how are we even keeping this game close? I mean, it's just human nature.
And then the last question, I guess, before we get to the actual game that I wanted to ask you is, someone on the site, I think it was Owen, was talking about how there's a real incentive for Bill Snyder in this one with the new coach and with Bill Snyder getting close to retirement to just really run it up and make sure that, you know, no recruit who's looking at both Kansas and K-State would ever choose Kansas over K-State. I mean, do you think that there's any validity in that?
Yeah, I think there is, just because, you know, Bill Snyder has seen firsthand what happens when he slips just a little bit and when a new coach who can actually bring in some talent, what he can do at KU. I mean, you go back to, I think it was 2002 or 2003, one of those years, K-State beats KU 64-0. And 2004, KU goes out and beats K-State in Lawrence. I mean, just 2 years later, you're talking about a 60-something point swing. So, I mean, I think Snyder saw what happened when he slipped up a little bit last time. He had, you know, those two down seasons. I believe they went 4-7 in 2004 and then 5-6 in 2005. And, you know, KU really took advantage of that. And KU started landing some of the top recruits in the state. Kerry Meyer was one of them. I mean, I believe he was the number one or number two ranked guy. They started keeping the in-state talent. They started doing well in Missouri, you know, obviously Texas. They were able to boost the recruiting a little bit. And K-State, really, you know, Snyder slips a couple years. Obviously, they hire Ron Prince, which is kind of like their version of Turner Gill, except a lot better, which is really sad. But, you know, so I think Snyder's seen it. He's seen what happens. If he slips up just a little bit, you know, KU can take advantage. And they really did when you look at that kind of 2003 to 2005 range. So I think he will definitely go for the jugular if he can.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I was thinking when you were talking about the people that Mangino brought in, Turner Gill brought in some guys who were, you know, supposedly highly rated and all that. And that was even after the disastrous first season. So I would think that you get a staff full of, you know, Dave Campbell, who's got Super Bowl rings, and you got, you know, respected coordinators and a respected head coach who I think can bring in some talent. I think there's definitely a lot of incentive to do that. As for the game, I don't think there's too much to talk about other than uh-oh. But I guess we'll just start off with Colin Klein quick. KU has kind of struggled. They struggled with Jordan Lynch of Northern Illinois, who is basically a not-as-good version of Colin Klein. So with Colin Klein, who actually has been an underrated passer this year, he's completing 70% of his passes and like 9.5 yards per attempt and stuff. So he's only thrown 80 times, but he's completing it and throwing it for big yardage when he does. And then obviously, you know, 4.6 yards a carry, and that's including sacks. So he's pretty dangerous, and I'm pretty terrified. Do you think, you know, we have any chance of stopping them? I mean, what do you think is their best shot?
You know, I hate to go all psychological here, but, you know, I think a lot of it, if KU wants to have a chance, they're going to have to frustrate K-State early, and especially Klein. And I say that because, you know, K-State knows that they're a heavy favorite in this game. They know it's a rivalry game. They know they've just beaten Oklahoma. If a couple things don't go their way early, I mean, let's say that KU somehow gets a huge special teams play or a fumble leads to a touchdown or a tip ball gets picked off. You know, I think K-State, they might start saying to themselves, man, we're losing at home to KU by 7 points or 10 points, whatever. We need to go out and make a play. You know, we're not just supposed to beat these guys. We're supposed to kill these guys. And who knows, maybe Klein gets frustrated. Maybe he throws an ill-advised pass or two, forces something into coverage, or, you know, they dial up something a little tricky that backfires on him, a la us on the second play against Rice. you know, so I think the only chance KU really has is if they can kind of hit K-State in the mouth early on and really make K-State think about the game and start saying to themselves, God, we should be killing these guys. You know, because I know in my own personal sports experience, I've had that before too, where, you know, you're on a team and you're saying, man, this team sucks. Why are we losing? Or why are we only up by 3 points? Let's go out and make a huge play here. And, you know, sometimes if you try a little too hard, you know, especially someone like Klein, like you said, you know, he's been, you know, throwing the ball pretty efficiently this year, but, you know, it only takes maybe him just trying to, you know, fire through a pretty small window downfield into coverage for something to go our way. So I think, you know, really getting them frustrated and getting them out of their comfort zone and really making them think a little bit too much about the game as much as you can with a Bill Snyder team. Obviously, that's, you know, they're extremely well coached, but I think that could honestly be maybe the only shot we have of really slowing them down.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, they have other guys on offense too. You know, John Hubert's got 4 touchdowns, 6.5 yards a carry. Daniel Sam's pretty big play threat. Tremaine Thompson's doing a good job at receiver, but you know, it starts and ends with Colin Klein. So I think we're just gonna stop discussing their offense there because he has already given me enough nightmares. On our side of the ball, tale of two quarterbacks here with Dane Crist under 50%, under 6 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He's obviously, you know, Charlie Weiss's guy from Notre Dame. Do you think he is the guy for the rest of the season? And do you think he should be the guy for the rest of the season?
I'm going to say yes and no. And the reason why I say I don't think there's any way Weiss goes away from him. I mean, he told us all offseason how this kid was going to be a difference maker. And I think he's just too committed to Crist right now, both, you know, professionally, personally. Obviously he's really, really close to him. He's really fond of the guy. The only reason why I think that there should be a potential switch is, you know, I think if KU only has a few games left and we have one, maybe, God willing, wins on the year, you know, why not see if someone else can come in and make something happen for you? And sorry, I had to grab the dog because he was trying to eat a picture frame. you know, with Crist graduating, I know everyone says, you know, Heaps is the starter next year. And obviously, you know, Heaps, highly touted, he's good in the spring game. But what if we start next year and he gets hurt in the first game and is out for the entire season?
Right.
I know I'm going to feel a lot better if Cummings has played 3 games and we have to throw him in there. And I don't really want to burn Beatty's red shirt, but, you know, I think you have a couple games left. You've only won 1 game. You haven't even really been close in many of them. Why not? You know, it seems like that's what every other team in football does. So do I think that's going to happen? Probably not. But who knows? I mean, maybe Crist gets banged up a little bit and they tell the public, oh, he's broken his thumb. He's going to miss the remaining 3 games. I mean, people spin this a lot. So
I mean, it's
definitely frustrating. You know, I know I had really, really high hopes. I thought that he was going to come in and, you know, I didn't think we were going to get Todd Reesing 2.0, but I thought we were just going to get consistent, even play from the quarterback position. That would be an awesome asset to our running game. And man, just hasn't been there.
I think, I mean, you know, I'm a crazy person with football offenses and stuff. You know, I like seeing, like, teams who run trick plays as a part of their offense versus just in desperation. And, like, I like seeing the Wildcat and I like seeing all that jazz. I mean, I think with Tony Pearson, Taylor Cox, James Sims, obviously, you know, Brandon Bourbon is still on the team. And then, you know, with Christian Matthews back there, I mean, I don't really know why we don't go to that Wildcat look more often. I mean, we drove the ball.
It's been effective.
Yeah, we drove the ball in Northern Illinois.
Against Northern Illinois, I mean, we had, what was it, the first drive in the second half, run the Wildcat Matthews, and we just marched straight down the field.
And then,
and you know what? Even Gill's staff recognized that late last year when, I believe we did the same thing against Missouri, when, you know, the offense just could do absolutely nothing. In fact, our best offense was James Franklin throwing us the ball repeatedly in the first half. But, I mean, they put Matthews in the Wildcat, and it didn't really lead to any scoring drives. But, you know, KU moved the ball. And there was a big difference between us getting 5-6 yards a play and Jordan Webb dropping back and getting sacked for a 9-yard loss. So, you know, both staffs recognize we have the personnel to run some Wildcat or Jayhawk. You know, Matthews does a pretty good job of it. I would love to see it more. I mean, I agree with you. I think when you have a quarterback who's struggling, you need to get as creative as you possibly can.
Yeah, I mean,
I think Mangino's teams did a great job of. There were years, 2004, 2005, especially when Swanson was hurt. Adam Barman, Brian Luke, I mean, these guys just could not move the football. And Mangino tried all sorts of stuff. I mean, he put Marcus Henry back there, who later got moved to receiver and just did a bunch of quarterback draws. I remember we did a flea flicker against Colorado on the first play of the game my freshman year in 2004. First play, just went right out, did a flea flicker, executed it. And we got a field goal, and we didn't really score much the rest of the game. But, you know, yeah, you gotta mix it up when things aren't working. I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, I'm just looking at the stats here, and all three of our big running backs, obviously Sims only has one game, but all three of our running backs are over 5 yards a carry. I mean, and then, you know, that would keep Klein off the field. Like, I just, you know, you don't have to bench Crist, but every, you know, few plays you come in and you run that for a while, or, you know, you give them a series off to think about it, or, I don't know. I mean, I think they should go to it more often than you do. And wow, is your dog probably wants us to be done with the podcast. So we'll just, we'll get you on record here.
He has found his squeaking toy.
Well, you've already given your prediction, but just, you're predicting a big K-State win.
Yeah. I mean, I really wish I could find any reason to hope, but yeah, you know what, and I wouldn't be surprised if KU kept it close for the first half. I wouldn't be surprised if K-State came out a bit flat. You know, they're coming off just a colossal win. I mean, I'd argue that's their biggest win since, you know, Snyder's second reign of terror in Manhattan. You know, huge win. They're going against a crappy team. They could definitely overlook us, but I feel like, you know, even with all that, at some point we're just going to, you know, it's like last year. We opening kickoff, K-State runs it back for a touchdown, or in the second half, I should say. And, it, you know, after that, I got my car and I went to Chipotle and I just downed a burrito in sorrow. You know, it's just stuff like that. I feel like there's just going to be too many big plays, too many times where we slip up. And, yeah, that'll be that.
I think I'm going to go with the defense kind of keeping them a little bit under control, just because I think, well, maybe not under control, but it's going to appear that way because I think we're going to run it a little bit more. I think they're going to run it a lot, so I don't think there's going to be as much an opportunity to score points. So I'm going to say something like 24-6 in that range. I don't think the offense is going to do much, but I think the defense is going to at least make it look like they're doing stuff. One last little note here. The preseason All-Big 12 basketball team was announced. Pierre Jackson of Baylor was your preseason player of the year. No problems with that. The rest of the first team, Jeff Withey, Rodney Magruder, LeBron Nash, and Mike Kabongo. And I guess just to finish, I wanted to do a little quick riff on why LeBron Nash may have NBA talent, and that's all well and good, but definitely should not be anywhere near a Big 12 first team. He shot a lot. He, you know, scored some points. That's all well and good. 41.8% effective field goal percentage, which is beyond awful. Did not shoot free throws all that well. Didn't shoot many of them, that's for sure. 43% from two, 23.5% from three. Did not assist very well. Did not rebound very well. I don't understand. So that's just my little thing. I think Elijah Johnson, granted I'm biased, but I think Elijah Johnson should have made it. And I think it's going to be abundantly clear at the end of the year that he should have made it, especially when you consider he shot somewhere around 50% from three from the start of the Big 12 tournament till the end of the season. So that's just my little deal on that. We're getting close to college basketball season.
Interesting. Sorry to
go ahead.
Back off that. I think that his game against Missouri last year just completely morphed people's perception of his season. You know, because he had the great game against Missouri where they got the upset. He had the amazing dunks. And every time I talk to someone about him, they're like, oh, man, but did you see his game against Missouri? It's one game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's all well and good. And, yeah, he might be a top 10, top 15 pick in the draft. That's just fine. But he's not a good college basketball player yet. So I'll just leave it at that. Nothing against the kid. Never met him. Nothing against Oklahoma State. Don't, send me your hate emails. I don't really care. But that's going to be it for the podcast. Hopefully we'll be back in a week or so, and hopefully we'll be celebrating a KU win over K-State.
Fingers crossed.
But until then, I don't have a sign-off yet. So rock chalk, and we'll talk to you next time.
Good talking to you.